Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Pope John Paul II accepted the resignation of Boston's Cardinal Bernard Francis Law today, effectively ending the career of one of the highest-ranking American officials in the Catholic Church. It has been a year of scandal for Boston's Archdiocese, the fourth largest see in the United States, with an estimated 2 million Catholics. At a press conference at the Boston Archdiocese headquarters this morning, spokeswoman Donna Morrissey reiterated Law's apology.
It is the Cardinal's fervent prayer that this action may help the Archdiocese of Boston to experience healing, reconciliation, and unity, which are so desperately needed. To all those who have suffered from his shortcomings and mistakes, the Cardinal both apologizes, and from them, he begs their forgiveness.
Connection listeners, Cardinal Law, one of the most influential leaders of the Catholic Church, has stepped down. Boston's Archdiocese is still in the eye of a storm of unprecedented scale. Does Cardinal Law's resignation give you hope for renewal in the Catholic Church? Or is this the beginning of major change in the American Catholic Church? Are there more resignations ahead? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me on the line now is Scott Appleby, professor of history at the University of Notre Dame, and in the studio, Anne Barrett Doyle, co-founder of the Coalition of Concerned Catholics and Survivors. And WBUR reporter, my colleague, Monica Brady-Meyeroff, has just slipped into the studio where she was at the news conference. Monica's been covering this story for the past year. Monica, tell me, at the news conference, watching, listening to Donna Morrissey, did you hear a change, anything that surprised you there?
What surprised me was their focus on the victims. For the past several months, is the Archdiocese hasn't really talked all that much about the victims. They've set up some support groups for them. But today, when people would ask, how is the Cardinal feeling? How are people at the Archdiocese feeling? They kept bringing it back to the victims and saying, this is a moment of sadness and relief, but it's truly a moment of sadness for those victims of alleged priest abuse, or the victims who were proven to be abused by priests. And that's what has to be remembered here, that it's about the victims. And that's something new that I was hearing to that level today.
Tell me, in your mind, what it was that turned for Cardinal Law that caused him to insist on resigning, because I'm sure that's what he had to do in Rome. He tried before, we're told he tried before and was rebuffed. But what changed in this whole story in the past few weeks?
What changed that I was hearing from lay Catholics and alleged victims and priests is the level of anger. It just was taken up a notch with the latest revelation of documents. Priests' files were turned over to lawyers for alleged victims of clergy abuse last week, and those files showed even more negligence on the part of Cardinal Law, and not just with young boys allegedly being abused by priests, but young girls who were studying to be nuns being sexually molested by priests, a priest allegedly trading drugs for sex, a priest possibly involved in the death of his lover, whom he'd fathered possibly two children with. That angered people to such a degree that it just re-sparked this entire scandal. In addition to that, the Archdiocese comes out and says they're considering bankruptcy. That upset many, many people. Victims feeling like they're going to be cheated, forced into a lesser settlement, laity feeling like they're walking out on their church. And, you know, out in the front of the Cathedral of the Holy Cross last Sunday, there's just a huge protest of victims and lay Catholics. 400 people chanting, "Law must go." I've never seen anything that big in the entire year of covering this story. It just was up a level that really made it clear, at least in my mind, that Cardinal Law had to be at least seriously considering a resignation, because how
it's
could
going
he
to be
come
very
back
hard
to
for him to come back from
exactly.
Rome without the resignation. Yes, I had a chat with the Holy Father, and we'll just press on. It was almost impossible.
Right. If he had done that, I would say the floodgates would be open, but really they were opened. I really don't know what would have happened if he'd done that.
Let me turn to Scott Appleby, who's a professor of history at the University of Notre Dame. Scott, Can you just put this in some kind of historical context? Has there ever been a cardinal in the United States resign under circumstances even remotely like this?
There's nothing really comparable. There have been scandals in the church before in the United States, but never after the kind of year we've had this year, where not only the national but the international spotlight has been on the Archdiocese of Boston. And I can't recall a time when a person as powerful as Cardinal Law has resigned and acknowledged his own mistakes and misdeeds. And there's certainly never been a time when an archdiocese of this size or of any size has been on the brink of bankruptcy. So in so many ways, this is unprecedented.
That Law would resign rather than staying to see it through, as Pope John Paul II had originally encouraged him to do. What are the implications for that in other archdioceses in the country, in places like California, New Hampshire? I mean, is this going to have a significant effect?
It will certainly have an effect, and it does make it a little bit more likely that there will be the so-called domino effect, and other bishops who, especially who served under Law in Boston, may be, pressure may mount on them to resign. On the other hand, Cardinal Law was unique in his prominence, the fact that he was the Pope's eyes and ears in the United States, and a confidant to the Pope, and really the most powerful ranking prelate in the country, and he was ultimately responsible for all the mismanagement that occurred in Boston. So it would have been impossible for the Archdiocese in this case to even begin to restore trust or to recover while he was still in office. And his situation is so exceptional that I'd be a little bit wary of applying it to, frankly, lesser dioceses and situations that are not quite as grievous.
Let me turn to Anne Barrett-Doyle in the studio here. And you are a co-founder of the Coalition of Concerned Catholics and Survivors. That means that the situation, the circumstances facing survivors, has been a matter of priority for your group for some considerable time. Is this a turning point for the Boston Archdiocese, in your view?
What this is the first meaningful recognition we have gotten from the church that the suffering of the victims matter at all. What we've gotten so far are lots of prayers, apologies, commissions, conferences, lots of words, a flurry of words, and the victims didn't take comfort in any of it. This really doesn't solve the problem, but at least it's a validation. It's actually an act of humility by the church and a validation that suffering really should cause them to change. It's the first tangible change we've seen.
Is it also the first tangible evidence you have that the laity have a real voice here? I mean, do you look at this as something that you and all the other groups speaking out have actually moved the cardinal to the point where he would resign?
I don't know how much we can take credit for that, to tell you the truth. I think that if we didn't have the backing of lawyers like Eric McLeish of the news media, I wonder if just our protest and request to be part of their decision-making would have made a difference. I tend to think that in the end it was the fear of being criminally prosecuted and of going bankrupt that really caused this change. However, I think the laity is mobilized, and I think we're going to see that change happen in the church.
Okay, so this has been your focus, to get Law to take responsibility. With today's resignation,
right,
he has. Does that mean you back off now? Or push ahead for further resignations?
No, I think if you had asked me in April, all I was looking for as a Catholic myself was for a bishop just overflowing with remorse and contrition. I really had this naive idea that his soul would just respond to the souls of all these victims, and he would say, "What can I do? Whatever you want, let me make this better." But he just showed a real staying power and a real resistance to any real change. So what we did was shift our attention, and we decided that the bishops were not going to be a source of change, especially after Washington, D.C., where they in fact decided that they wouldn't automatically report all abusive priests to criminal authorities. We decided then to concentrate on legislators and on criminal prosecutors as our only hope of getting justice for those who are abused by priests.
Let me turn back to Monica Brady-Meyerhoff, because, Monica, the other thing that happened in the last little while was 58 priests in the Boston Archdiocese publicly said, enough, time for Cardinal Law to go. That in itself, looking back over the past years, quite a remarkable thing, is it not?
It's remarkable. It might even be unprecedented. Priests take a promise of obedience to their bishop when they are ordained. So for them to stand up and say, we don't believe in you anymore, we don't trust your spiritual leadership, you have to go, it's huge. And there was the pressure of mounting on law that today there was going to be another meeting of a larger, more influential group of priests to sign on to that same letter. So here was Cardinal Law facing the possibility that as many as half of his priests want him to resign. And are publicly calling for it. Now, the Archdiocese of Boston today said that that didn't have any bearing on his decision, that Cardinal Law made this decision because he feels it's the best thing for the Archdiocese to bring about reconciliation and healing. But that said, talking to church scholars and sources in Rome, it definitely seemed to reverberate in the halls of the Vatican that the priests were becoming so public in their disapproval of Law and the way he's been handling the scandal.
Now, there's another side to this story, Monica, that I need to hear from you before you go, and that is the legal side of it. There is a grand jury investigating this case right from the top to the bottom. Does Law's resignation in any way change the legal work that's underway here?
No, it doesn't. That will go forward. Law's attorney has said that Cardinal Law will appear before a grand jury when he's called to. And it appears that what the Attorney General of Massachusetts will be looking at is something called the Doctrine of Liability. And this looks at priests' cover-up of criminal behavior as using to charge companies that fail to stop the wrongdoing of their employees. So they're going to try, it sounds like, to apply.
This has been a real problem for them, though. With everybody calling for some kind of criminal investigation, the issue has been that they haven't really had anything, any law under
right.
which they could do this. Right?
That is the sounds like it's the fault of the laws of Massachusetts. New Hampshire had better laws, and under the Protection of Children, they were able to investigate the diocese in New Hampshire. But here we don't have laws for that, so it has been a problem. But it sounds like they may have found a possible good law to apply. And like I said, that's the Doctrine of Liability, which is often used for corporations.
This may mean that Cardinal Law will be charged with a criminal offense. Other church officials within the archdiocese could be charged if, as the Attorney General seems to imply, this law can be useful in finding them culpable.
Possibly. It also doesn't change any of the civil lawsuits. There are dozens and dozens of civil lawsuits against Law and other church leaders. Those will go forward as planned. Cardinal Law is coming back to Boston this weekend, and he says he will testify before, he will answer questions under oath on Tuesday for another deposition in the case of Father Paul Shanley. So those cases will go forward. He does not get out of any criminal or civil liability by resigning as head of the archdiocese.
And Scott Appleby, just before we go to a break, a quick word from you on the fact that the resignation, as unprecedented as it is the beginning of a story which has still a lot of unfolding to do.
Right. I don't think any restoration of trust could have begun while Cardinal Law was in office. But now that he's out of office, it's just the first step. In terms of the pastoral and spiritual and the general morale of the archdiocese, the next step will be the appointment of a permanent Archbishop of Boston, who comes in with a clean slate, is transparent, has a different pastoral style than Cardinal Law, frankly, and is absolutely no nonsense about the need to put victims first and to have full disclosure of everything that the Church has done in this matter. So we're hoping that that appointment will be a shrewd one.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, are you feeling a sense of vindication with the resignation of Cardinal Law today? Do you see in that the beginning or the opportunity for real change in the Catholic Church? Or is there just so much ahead that really this is only the beginning? 1-800-423-TALK to join us today. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. A momentous day for the Archdiocese of Boston. The resignation this morning announced around noon in Rome. Cardinal Law no longer standing as head of the Boston Archdiocese. And implications right across the country for Catholics in the United States. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We'd like to hear from you on your thoughts about today's resignation. With me in the studio, Anne Barrett Doyle. She's co-founder of the Coalition of Concerned Catholics and Survivor. On the line from the University of Notre Dame, Professor of History, Scott Appleby. And just a few moments ago, the Reverend Christopher Coyne, spokesperson for the Boston Archdiocese, was talking with reporters specifically about the resignation of Cardinal Law.
He is a good man. a flawed man in some of his judgments, as he himself would recognize. But his basic goodness is still so much a part of who he is. And the tragedy is many people, most especially the victims and their families, have been hurt.
It's probably an appropriate time to introduce Philip Saviano, who's on the line with us as well. Philip is head of the New England chapter of the Survivors Network for those abused by priests. And Philip, when you hear Reverend Coyne say that Cardinal Law is a good man, a flawed man, and that the tragedy remains that of the victims, are you hearing a change in tone or a change in substance from the church?
No. Listen, a lot of people have flaws, but they shouldn't be in positions of responsibility, and they shouldn't be in positions where they can allow countless children to be harmed both physically and emotionally. I recognize that Father Coyne is speaking with a level of contriteness, and that's certainly appropriate. But it's important to remember that we're talking about criminal activity and the cover-up of criminal activity. And so it's one thing to say that the cardinal is flawed, but it's also necessary to realize that he was a part of this cover-up, and it was through his actions that so many children were hurt over the years in the Boston Archdiocese.
Are you telling me, Philip, that in one sense a lot more blood has to be spilled before there's any kind of healing here?
Well, I think, first of all, the resignation is a first step. It's certainly going to bring a measure of relief to people, not only to survivors, but also to parishioners who have been in a great deal of pain in Boston, particularly, I'd say, in the last month. But there's much work to be done. And with the cardinal gone, we have to worry about who's going to replace him. The criminal investigations will continue. And the other thing to remember is that this is just Boston, and unfortunately this problem is endemic in dioceses throughout the United States, if not throughout the world.
Are you seeing at all in this a change in the Catholic Church, any kind of acknowledgement that didn't exist before, Philip?
Yes, I certainly see an acknowledgement. But the acknowledgement has come only because they were forced into it by relentless reporting by the news media, and because so many victims this year have found the strength within themselves to come forward about the rotten experiences of their childhood, and by speaking together have sort of taken back some of the power that was stolen from them when they were kids. And, you know, I've been involved with this myself for 10 years. In fact, next week, December 19th, is the 10-year anniversary of the first time that I sat down with a reporter to talk about what happened to me. It took me until I was 40 years old to find the courage to do that. But all the 10 years since then, I've been saying, you know, one of the things about the Catholic Church is that, unfortunately, none of the parishioners, none of the members of the church get to say who's going to be the bishop or the cardinal. We just have to sort of accept who's given to us. But today, I realized this morning that there is one thing that we can do. Is we can say who we don't want to be in power. And finally, that's happened here in Boston. It's a historic moment, and it'll be very interesting to see if it happens in other parts of the country as well in the months to come.
Philip, I suspect a whole lot of those people came out and told their story because people like you did that so long ago. So thanks for joining us, and we'll talk again.
Okay, thank you.
Philip Saviano heads the New England chapter of the Survivors Network for those abused by priests. And Anne Bertol, you're nodding your head as he was finishing his remarks.
Well, I always love listening to Phil, but it's a really important point here because the church is going to change and justice is going to be delivered to the victims. I really have faith in this. The heroes, the heroism of people like Phil Saviano and Arthur Austin and Greg Ford and John Harris and Stephen Lynch. I mean, I could go on and on and on. The people who came forward, Robert Costello, Susan Renahan, Susan Gallagher, to say, this is my story. I was raped by a priest. I was molested by a priest. Can we even begin to imagine the kind of courage that took? These are the people who did it. Without them, there'd be no news stories. There'd be no lawyers to prosecute the cases. So I think we're in danger always, we Catholics, of forgetting that. And let's remind ourselves constantly.
Scott Appleby, I was in a casual conversation with someone here who's a strong member of the Catholic Church just a week or so ago. We were talking, speculating about whether or not Cardinal Law would resign. And what he told me was quite interesting. He said, I hope he does, because I think that that might change the sort of imperious nature of the Catholic Church. If we can get past that, maybe there's a chance at finding some healing. Do you think that there's truth in that?
I think there's truth that there are imperious characteristics of the Catholic Church. I don't think Cardinal Law's resignation is going to change that overnight. But seriously, to speak very seriously about it, it's a flaw in not only the Catholic Church, but in any institution that has tremendous responsibility and power. And Catholics, by virtue of becoming priests or bishops or lay ministers, or don't escape the human condition. And so it's a problem in the church. The church is also, we have to say, filled with people who've overcome the problem or never had it. People with great humility and spirits of service, and also many of these people are in leadership positions. The critique that's been leveled against Pope John Paul II, even among the many, many admirers he has among scholars and observers of the church, is that he has appointed over the years people whose loyalty to him has sometimes been greater than their judgment on other matters. And I'm not suggesting that Cardinal Law is necessarily in that camp, but a number of the people who the Pope has appointed have taken quite seriously the pomp and circumstance of the church, at times so much so that they have given themselves over to clericalism, to the assumption that the priesthood and certainly the hierarchy, the office of bishop, places the holder of that office above the laity, above other priests, above women religious and lay women, automatically, and that they're not required to listen sensitively to and consult with and take seriously people of faith within the church. And that is, it's not only a flaw, I think it's a sin, and it's particularly to be named a sin within an institution and a community of faith that follows Jesus Christ. Let me ask you something else, if I can.
When John Paul II accepts the resignation of Cardinal Law, as he did earlier today, does he do that as an act of strength or an act of weakness?
I think he does it with great regret and sadness, and I wouldn't call it either strength or weakness. I would call it acknowledging the inevitability of that move and the seriousness of the crisis. I would have tended to call it a strength if he'd done it 6 months or 8 months ago, frankly, when I think it should have been done, when it was first made clear the fundamental pattern of secrecy and mismanagement that now we're getting the details of. I think that would have been a moment of strength. Now it's kind of a bowing to the inevitability of the situation.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-TALK. Let's go first to Brighton, Massachusetts. Mary's joining us. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, sure. Well, you asked about what we all thought of this, and I wanted to say that I think Cardinal Law is setting an example by taking accountability, taking responsibility for the decisions that he made. And I think that, you know, all actions have consequences, and I'm glad to see that he, as a leader of the Catholic Church, is taking responsibility for the bad decisions he made. You know, this is so important in leadership, and we don't see that enough today in any aspect of our community. And I think it took him a little too long to step down, but at last he's doing it. I think it sends a signal that he is taking responsibility. I also think it will finally allow people to heal. The victims, the parishioners, the priests that did not engage in this horrible activity, and the community as a whole. I mean, this has been devastating for all of Boston.
Mary, what people have been saying so far on the program is that it would have been an act of leadership had it come a little earlier, but coming as late as it did, it lost a lot of the opportunity to show that strength of character.
Well, it did, but I think at the same time, it's not, yes, I think he should have stepped down back at the beginning. I think what everybody said is absolutely right. But at least he is stepping down now. So it is some act of a leader. Maybe it's not leadership at its best, but it's a leader showing some responsibility. It took an awful lot of public pressure, which is what's unfortunate, because you would expect a moral person, somebody in his position, to have taken that responsibility, the accountability earlier, and seen what he should have done.
And let me hear from you on this, if
okay.
I can.
Mary, let me just jump in here with a really honest, unchecked reaction. Where is your rage? I mean, this guy has let thousands of kids get molested and raped. We don't congratulate him at this point for leadership whatsoever.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to come across that way at all. That is not. I am completely outraged. Please, don't think that's what I meant. I'm outraged, and honestly, it's about time that he stepped down. I think absolutely, it's absolutely time that he stepped down. He's finally done it. I'm outraged, and I think from the beginning he should have. I'm just saying it's about time it happened, and maybe now by this happening, you know, the victims will get their day in court. People will be able to get these issues addressed. The Catholic Church will be able to finally come up with a policy and get a leader who does put children first.
Mary,
no, I absolutely am outraged. Please, I didn't mean it to come across any other way.
No, thanks for that, Mary. Appreciate your call. 1-800-423-8255 to Gloucester, Massachusetts now. Elizabeth's joining us. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Dick. Thanks for having the show.
Okay.
I want to just let you know that I think another caller might have made this point already, but as long as the American Catholic Church is connected to Rome, we will not see transparency. We will not see an end of a patriarchal, hierarchical structure that doesn't allow for the true mission of the church, dedication to helping the poor and continuing a practice of faith, be the primary activity of the church. I wonder whether or not those Catholics who are happy with the way the church is doing this will continue and support Rome, and whether or not those American Catholics who find this intolerable will be part of a schism to form an American Catholic Church that returns to the mission of the founding, leaders of the church.
Scott Appleby, we had Alan Wolfe in the studio with us. He heads the Boise Center on Religion and Society at Boston College. And that's in large part what he was saying a week or so ago, that perhaps it's time for the American Catholic Church to take stock of itself and see whether or not it can continue with this hierarchical relationship it has.
It's easier for Alan to say that in that he's not a Catholic.
Fair enough.
As a Catholic, and I don't mean that in any snide way at all, I mean that it's sometimes difficult for non-Catholics to understand what can seem at times, especially times like this, to be a kind of bizarre attachment to the Roman Church on the part of American Catholics. And it's an attachment that's very deep, and it's not blind to the kind of critique you just articulated, and that your caller articulated, namely that the Church in Rome often stands in the way, especially in recent history, of the kind of accountability and transparency that many American Catholics, myself included, think is necessary in order for the gospel to be effectively preached and people served in this country. At the same time, Catholics tend to look at this question from a long and deep history that recognizes that popes come and go, administrations of the Vatican come and go, and the church does change. And because we believe in the principles of unity apostolically with Rome and the other churches around the world, and we're not congregational like Protestant Christianity is, we have a deep-seated belief in the need to strive for that unity, especially at these difficult times. And so we put up with a lot, frankly, but we remain kind of doggedly loyal to the principle of unity and the hope for reform. And if we leave, well, then any hope there is for reform on certain matters goes out the door with us.
Elizabeth, let me hear from you.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I'm baptized Catholic. I'm one of nine kids. I had both my kids baptized. When it came time to have my oldest son receive his first communion, I had a wonderful sit-down with Reverend Myron Bullock, okay, who's the brother of the other Bullock, who's been active in this issue. And I did my basic, you know, I love this church, I want to be a part of this church, but I cannot be part of a church when I know in my heart of hearts that if Jesus was on the planet, he would not be discriminating against gay or lesbian people, that it is irresponsible morally to prohibit folks in the third world from using condoms to prevent the spread of AIDS, okay? And if we don't start looking at these issues and being thoughtful about looking at the gospel in the 21st century and redefining our faith in light of that, and those very deep and powerful moral issues, that we allow kids in high school who are struggling with the fact that they're homosexual, and their lack of support in the community leads to suicide at a very high incidence. If we don't look at the moral implications of that, and the fact that if Jesus was on the planet today, he would embrace those children.
Elizabeth, okay? Let me just stop you if I can, because I'd like to hear from Anne, who's head of co-founder of one of the groups here, because one of the things Elizabeth is talking about is that in all the loss of faith that has taken place over the past year, everybody has gone in a slightly different and personal direction. Mm-hmm. There have been many groups struck of like-minded people, and maybe I'm thinking too far in the future, but I wonder if, in your view, that splintering will ever come back together again in any kind of cohesive form.
I mean, I do have a vision of the church where the laity, as Jim Mueller, a voice of the faithful, has said, does serve like a Congress that checks the clergy, and the clergy in turn would check the laity. But there's an important addition to this. We need the voices of non-Catholic survivors. Most survivors of sexual abuse by clergy are not Catholic anymore. We need them to remain as some kind of force in this church, if they will, some kind of conscience for us, because they can tell us when we start lapsing into our criminality again, when we start elevating priests again. I think the laity has a ton of culpability here. I think this church priests could not have gotten away with this if we weren't so deferential towards them. We love to elevate our priests. It is a peculiar Catholic problem, and we have to get over this and start treating these people just like individuals like ourselves.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. And when we come back after the break, we'll be talking with James Post, Voice of the Faithful, President of Voice of the Faithful, to carry this conversation another step further. I'll take this moment to say thanks to Scott Appleby for being with us. Scott, I appreciate your taking time out of your day on this day of all days.
Thank you very much.
Scott Appleby, Professor of History at University of Notre Dame and an authority on the Catholic Church in America. Once again, our number is 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the construction.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. The following statement was issued by Cardinal Bernard Law shortly after noon in Rome earlier today. It begins, "I am profoundly grateful to the Holy Father for having accepted my resignation as Archbishop of Boston." He ends his short remarks by saying, "The particular circumstances of this time suggest a quiet departure. Please keep me in your prayers." Archbishop Cardinal Bernard Law resigns today, a significant change in the year-long scandal affecting the Archdiocese of Boston. And we're interested in hearing from you about how you mark that. We're going to Louisville, Kentucky now. Paula's on the line. Hi, Paula.
Hello. I called in. This is a fabulous show, very interesting. We here in Louisville have experienced, I think we have now, we're pushing 200 lawsuits against various priests in our archdiocese over who knows how many years. But one thing I thought was interesting about the fact that Cardinal Law did finally resign today, and it seems like maybe he should have ages ago, and I agree. I initially would agree with that. But then I got to thinking, what if he had resigned? Would the subsequent information that has come to light in just the last week or two, all these papers and notes and whatnot from the Archdiocese, would those have come to light if he had just said, okay, you know, I'll go away? Would we really understand the depth and the breadth of the cover-up and what's been going on in Boston, and I'm sure it's happening everywhere else, and I'm sure we have some revelations that we'll yet see here in Louisville.
Philip Saviano, who's the victim who talked with us a little earlier in the program, Paul, is not with us right now, but I suspect that if he was, he would tell you that the resignation of the cardinal would not in any way at one point or another have changed the fact that all the victims have been coming forward and that the legal process was going to follow its course with or without cardinal law in position?
Well, I think Paula has a really interesting point, which is that because cardinal law was so intransigent and because they wouldn't give forth files when they were asked for, because they silenced victims so that victims got so desperate they had to go to court, it was actually the church's resistance every step of the way, including Cardinal Law not resigning earlier.
And you think that strengthened the spine of some victims to come forward who might not have otherwise?
It strengthened the spine of all of us, of the lawyers, of the criminal prosecutors, the attorney general, of the legislators. All of us have been mobilized because things were so bad and because the church didn't really take constructive action. This is the first constructive action Cardinal Law is stepping down.
So, Paula, are you afraid that with the resignation today that some of the pressure, some of the energy generated by the victims and by the people in Louisville, in Boston, in California may diminish a bit?
I don't think so. I know personally I have never been so angry as I have been, and I'm not a victim. I have an acquaintance with someone who was a victim. We've never talked about it. As I said, we're only an acquaintance. But just personally, as a parent, as a lifelong Catholic, I have just never felt so much anger and just almost rage that we could be discounted so easily, that what we would think and what would be important to us could be so just discounted that only what the priests and the bishops thought was, you know, it was patronizing. They did what
but,
they thought.
But
was
are you feeling, Paula, in any way empowered by the fact that the pressure that we've been discussing on the program may have, probably did have a significant effect and in leading to the cardinal's resignation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It has been the grassroots efforts. I am an electronic member of Voice of the Faithful. I've been impressed. I've been very, very happy because so many times we would just, you know, say, well, Father said such and such. And so, you know, if Father says, then that must be okay. And I think the comments that have been made in terms of the responsibility of the laity to demand and really come to grips and be responsible for what is going on in our parishes, in the end, they do belong to us. And I think in some ways we kind of have forgotten that, or we have allowed other people to take possession.
Paula, maybe you can just stay on the line with us for a bit, because James Post has joined us. James is president of Voice of the Faithful, the organization of which you say you're an electronic member. James, hello.
Good morning, Dick.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Your thoughts on the news today of that the cardinal resigned?
Well, this is a day of sadness, for sure, because it just puts an accent mark on a terribly sad and tragic year that we've had. On the other hand, it's also a sign of hope, because I think it had become clear in the last several months that the cardinal's ability to exercise the moral authority and leadership had really dissipated. So the sign of hope is that with Bishop Lennon's appointment as apostolic administrator, that we can take the first step on what will surely be a long road to healing.
I'm interested in hearing from all of you, Anne Barrett Doyle here and Paula in Louisville and James Post, whether or not the laity does have at this point any responsibility to look at the resignation of Cardinal Law and say, right, perhaps now it's time for the laity to begin putting things back together, because there was, as we talked about earlier in the program, so much pressure on him to resign. James, maybe you can start.
Well, I think there's no question that the role of the laity has to be expanded and made more meaningful in the life of the Catholic Church. You know, there's a simple
way to illustrate. In one sense, that's already happened, hasn't it?
Well, perhaps it has, but we have much further to go. If a lay person, a mother, a grandparent, a parent, had been sitting on a personnel committee, John Gagan, Paul Shanley, many of these other priests would never have been reassigned from parish to parish. It's really as simple as that. without the laity's full involvement in the governance and the guidance of the church, we're going to continue to see a system characterized by secrecy and authority continue to create human wreckage along the way. We can't have that. What we have to have is a system that's characterized by sunlight, by openness, and by collaboration. And that's what Voice of the Faithful is working for.
Yeah, I totally agree with Jim. I mean, this is, even though the laity's voice was in a way heard here in Boston, this is not yet a structural change. I mean, we don't have power yet to appoint the new bishop. So I think we're just going to have to keep scrapping along and organizing and saying the intelligent, morally responsible thing, which is that, look, absolute power has been proven to be the most corrupting influence in the world. Let us come help you. Let us check each other, and together we can make a much better church.
Paula, last word to you.
Well, I think that's true, and I think there's no other organization in which there is no check on power. My mother's a Methodist, and I know I'm aware of how things work in the Methodist Church, and it certainly isn't like they work in the Catholic Church.
Paula, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
1-800-423-8255 to Cambridge, Massachusetts now. Bernadette's on the line. Hi, Bernadette.
Yes, hello. I'm trained as a Catholic theologian, and I want to say that this is a historic moment for us to think about Catholic moral theology and to recognize that traditional Catholic sexual ethics are inadequate for solving this crisis because they do not focus on abuses of power.
So what needs to change?
What needs to change is that the bishops and the laity and the priests need to work to reduce the power imbalances that make sexual abuse possible, so that instead of focusing on opposing contraception, abortion, sexual love between consenting adults of the same gender, and to influence public policy on these points, we need to focus on improving the situation within Catholic families.
But are you talking about empowering the laity?
I'm talking about empowering the laity, that's right. But I'm also saying that it's not just a matter of governance, it's also a matter of theology. For example, St. Thomas Aquinas, the single most influential Catholic theologian, viewed abortion, contraception, sodomy, that is homosexuality, and masturbation as worse than rape and incest. Because rape and incest, while sinful, are at least natural in his view. And this is the view that has shaped Catholic official teaching about moral theology, and that's what we need to change.
Okay, Bernadette, thank you for your call. 1-800-423-8255. And let's go, if we can, to Boston. Dennis is joining us. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, are you on a speakerphone?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I have to use a speakerphone.
Okay, just get close.
Okay, the reason I called is I had a problem with the priest. I think I don't want to get caught up in the anger, because I think it's also a day of a real mourning, because as a Catholic, this is my family, and that my family had to come to this point of all this legal action is just is for me very devastating. So as much as I'm still angry, and I've been angry and wanting the cardinal to resign, I still don't want to overlook the fact that it's also a day of deep, deep sadness for all of us, and mourning that it had to come to this. It's horrible.
It was, I suppose, in a way, though, inevitable in your view?
Oh, no, of course. It's not. I was, you know, yesterday I was excited. I was looking forward to this, hoping that the resignation would be there. But then when I heard it on the radio, just a deep sadness came over me that it had to come to this, that the church that I love, you know, had to come to the point with all this horrible stuff that had to come to this point. It was just devastating.
Dennis, this is Anne. I so hear what you're saying. I really appreciate this point. I feel the same way. I feel completely dislocated by this. I mean, here I am, a Catholic mother of four, and for me, the church has only meant good things. I see the effect of Catholicism all around me, lots of stable family life, a real sense of holiness. I thank the church for that. I have a sense of reverence. But suddenly here I am calling for my bishops to go to jail, and it's just crazy, and I don't know how this happened, but I think God is just going to keep speaking to us through the suffering of the survivors, and I guess we just keep listening and see where this takes us, but I think we're going to get out of this somehow.
If I could just add one thing. This is Jim Post, President of Voice of the Faithful. Our organization is composed of just thousands of middle Americans, family value oriented people who have just been horrified by what they've learned, by the tragic damage that's been done to people's lives through sexual abuse. And I think that what we see in having happened in this year is just thousands and thousands of people have been awakened to the horror of sexual abuse through the behavior that we've seen of certain of these priests. But they've gotten up out of their chairs. They are now ready to take steps of action to move this forward. I think we want to say, as our Jewish brothers and sisters have said in the past about the Holocaust, we must teach ourselves and our children never again. This must never happen again. It's unfair, it's unjust that if this happens to any individual, and we have an obligation to do justice to all of the survivors of these cases of sexual abuse.
Dennis, it's Dick here. Are you going to Mass on Sunday?
Yes. It has not affected my church going. It's more a matter of I was so caught up, I think, in my own anger with everything that I didn't realize it was going to strike me the way it did this morning when I heard that he finally resigned, that I would just be overwhelmed with sadness. And I think it is. It's something that we will move on and that it should never happen again and will never happen and hopefully will never happen again. But I just don't want to get caught up in the vitriolic sort of talk, because this is our family, and or at least it's my family. And I want justice done. I want to make sure justice is done. But I also want to own the fact that you know, this happened to us. And I don't know if any of that makes sense, but it's a sad
day. All of it. All of it makes sense, Dennis.
All I'll say, Dennis, is that I said to a group of fellow activists the other day, I feel this year that I lost my church, but I found its prophets. The other side of it is I have never heard so much truth-telling, so many people seeking meaning in my life as I have this year.
Ann Barrett Doyle, thanks for coming in.
Sure.
Ann Barrett Doyle, co-founder of the Coalition of Concerned Catholics and Survivors. Dennis, thank you for your call. And Jim Post, thanks for taking time out of a busy day to be with us as well.
Thank you, Dick.
Jim Post is president of Voice of the Faithful. Earlier, we talked with Philip Saviano. He heads the New England chapter of the Survivors Network for those abused by priests. Scott Appleby was with us, professor of history at University of Notre Dame and WBUR reporter. Monica Brady Myroff was also on the program. Connection listeners, we will continue to follow this story with you. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
To purchase cassettes and CDs of The Connection, please visit www.theconnection.org or phone 1-800-909-9287.
This is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Elephant.